Blog Talk Radio.
Government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
Welcome to Stovetop Politics. I'm your host, Virginia Cruda. You can find me, as always, on Twitter, at VA Cruda. And tonight we've got kind of a packed show. We've got some stuff we didn't get to last week. And plus, you know, as is wont to happen, over the last week, more stuff happened. So we're going to talk about that, too. Everything from Kanye West's clothing line for post-apocalyptic hobos to what we're doing and not doing in regards to ISIS in the Middle East, and really what we should be doing. And we're actually going to start with that. We've got a previous guest on with us tonight, a friend and fellow veteran, Moose MacArthur. Moose, how you doing?
Doing good, doing good. Thank you. Thanks for letting me chime in on this.
Hey, well, you know, you in a lot of ways, you're actually better to talk about this than I am, because you know, I've been around veterans my whole life. I am one myself, but having never been, you know, I mean, I worked in the hospital. I didn't deploy. I was never really on the ground. I saw the aftermath and a lot of it, but I didn't really see, you know. As far as firsthand, you've seen a lot more than I have. The way, just kind of the way things are over there. It's very different. It's something that you can't really speak to unless you've seen it from.
Right.
From that kind of a perspective, and so when I come to talk about things like this, I really, you know, everything I know. You know, it's definitely applicable. The you know, my experience and the things that I know, but it's a little bit more real when I can bring in somebody who's actually been there. And so that's, you know, I love to, you know, have you as a resource to talk about this.
Definitely. Anytime.
So, one of the questions I have for you, and I've noticed this from a lot of people who are veterans talking about the things that are going on, there were a couple of failed attacks on Al-Asad Air Base, right? Now this is being controlled by Marines.
Right.
What, 300 or 400 Marines currently there, and
right. Well
this is stuff that
the. I mean, yeah, the base is so big, though. You know, is part of the
right.
The thing is, you know. So for them to have a successful attack, I mean, it would have to be one of those, you know, the numbers. It would have to they would just have to just have the numbers.
Right.
It would be crazy.
Right. Now, when my dad was in Afghanistan, he said that there were a couple of times where there were rockets launched he was near Kandahar, and he said there were a couple times where they had rockets launched at them, but they were basically, insurgents would come and they'd set up the rocket and they'd just kind of give it a half-ass, we're going to point it toward where the Americans are and then we're going to run like hell because we don't want to be here when they figure out where this is.
Right, yeah,
and
that's...
So it was kind of like, just kind of to remind you, we're still here and we don't like you kind of thing. But they weren't
right.
serious about it because they weren't sticking around to make sure that something got hit. And they were, you know, would you characterize what's going on? I mean, with Al-Assad being as big as it is, the kind of attacks that they're launching against them, would you say it's more something like that? Or would it be more like, I don't know if you remember Jurassic Park, when they talk about the electric fences around the Velociraptor cage.
Right.
And they were saying, well, they never attack the same place twice. You know, are they looking for are they systematically looking for weaknesses in, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I think the way I look at it is I look at a couple things. I look at, you know, by them capturing the surrounding villages and towns and cities, I think they're definitely testing the water. They're testing to see what the Marines are going to do, what the United States is going to do. They're trying to get a good
right.
feel on that. And as far as the IDF or the indirect fire, that's an everyday thing.
Yeah.
That's normal. That's what you were talking about, where they shoot
right.
and hope to hit something. Just kind of letting you know that they're there. And then the attacks, from what I've read, is the attacks are suicide bombers. So
right.
you got them kind of seeing how far can they get, you know?
Right.
But I do remember right before I got into Afghanistan, Bagram was attacked, and they actually were trying to dig. The insurgents were trying to dig under the berms to get in. So if they
right.
want to get in, they're going to get in. There's no way around that. It's just, what are they going to do once they're in? How many numbers are they going to get in? So, I mean, I think they're just testing testing us out as a country to see, they're testing, all of our authorities out to see what they're going to do. Are they going to change the ROEs? Are they going to, you know,
right.
are the Marines going to start patrolling? Are they going to leave the compound and start patrolling? Are the Marines going to attack the ISIS? You know, they're just really seeing what's going,
yeah.
Because they know, I mean, they know exactly what's going on. They know exactly how many Marines are in there. They know exactly how to get in the base. I mean, ISIS is everywhere, especially
yeah.
It's an air base, and the Marines are training National Army. I can't tell you how many times we trained National Army, and as soon as we would go out on mission, they would turn around on us. So... who's this?
Yeah.
I mean, I guarantee there's ISIS inside that National Army that's being trained, and they're telling other, you know, they're telling the others where the compounds are. They're telling the others where the weaknesses are. So when you look at it that way, you know that it can easily be attacked. It
right.
can easily be, you know, overrun in numbers. You got to look at it, you know, like I said earlier, they're testing to see, are we going to send more air power in? Are we going to, you know, what is the U.S. going to do so that they know what's going to happen in the future? That's my personal opinion
yeah.
From what I saw. But
so the president has now asked for authorization to, you know, for more force. And one of the things that's really struck me, and I wanted to kind of get your candid opinion on this as well, we're asking for more military force to go in and attack ISIS so that we can claim objectives that we only lost because this president withdrew us in the first place.
Right.
You know, how many soldiers do you think are really almost burned out at this point at the idea that their friends lost their lives for nothing, for something that we're going to have to go and spend more lives getting back? You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, I wouldn't say burned out. I don't, especially from, I mean, I can speak from a few of the Army veterans that I've met and that I have met since I've been home, plus, you know, the guys that I served with. It's not so much that we're burned out. It's more that we're upset that we pulled out before the mission was done. But it goes deeper than that. It goes to the pre-Obama. Pre-Obama, if you were in a city, say Ramadi, if you were in Ramadi on Route Michigan and somebody had a cell phone, you could take him out because here's a guy with a cell phone and right across the street is a pile of rocks. Oh, and here is a convoy coming down the street. So I'm cleared to take him out. Okay? So
right.
Not only does that possibly eliminate an IED threat, that puts the fear into the enemy where, you know,
right.
they have to be a little bit smarter, or that puts the fear in them where the U.S. is crazy, we're not going to mess with them. And that's what we lost because of us being handcuffed. So, you know, like when Obama came in with these new ROEs, it went from we're going to rid the world of Taliban and work on a little bit of hearts and minds to we're going to work on hearts and minds and maybe we'll eliminate some Taliban while we're at it. Can't toss a grenade in a building anymore. Can't use a claymore. You have to use a pop-up flare, basically saying, hey, I'm right here. You can't kick in a door. You know, you can't shoot them when they're in a holy building. Even when you got snipers that got eyes on, you can't shoot. If you see somebody shooting at you and they go into a building and they come out and they don't have a gun, you can't even do anything to them. If you see them shooting at you and then you bring up your weapon and they drop theirs before you get a shot off, that's manslaughter, brother. You're in trouble.
Yeah. You know,
so,
it reminds me of the old Bill Cosby. He talks about the, you know, losing the toss at the beginning of the war. And he's talking about the Revolutionary War. He says, you know, and it feels like we're on the other side of the coin toss at this point. But, you know, he talks about how the colonists can wear any color clothes that they want to, and they can hide behind the rocks and trees and wherever they want. And your team must wear bright red and march in a straight line.
That's exactly how
it
is.
We're effectively doing it on purpose.
I mean, to answer your question is, majority of service members would say, yes, pull us out. Get us out of there if these are the rules that you're going to have. But now you're going to have people, I'm upset because I, you know, every once in a while I go to the recruiting office, you know, and see all these young guys coming in and, it's like, you know, what are you doing? Oh, I want to be in infantry. Okay, you know. And then I think about everything I saw, and this guy's going to shed blood in the same spot that we shed blood, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And God forbid he has to have the same handcuffed ROEs. I mean, that is just miserable. So, I mean, I am 100% all for us ridding the world of ISIS. If you get rid of these dang handcuffs, if we can do what we're trained and we can put the fear of God, well, they don't fear God, but if we can put the fear back in these, you know, and it's ISIS, it's everyone, because
well, we
there's
don't want
countries
them to fear
that,
God, really. We want them to fear us.
Right, that's what I'm saying. They don't fear God, but, you know, we just want them to fear the U.S., and we want the other countries to fear the U.S., because it's deeper than ISIS. I mean,
yeah,
I worked with people from Germany, some German guys, and they're like, we really don't want to go on a mission with you because then we got to use your rules, and we have our own rules, you know? So nobody wants to work with us anymore. So it just goes deeper than, you know, just being burned out. It's, I mean, I'd go tomorrow if I could. If the rules changed and I was healthy, bam, I'd be there.
Yeah.
You know?
It's like the Rambo at the beginning of the second movie when they ask him to go back in. He's like, well, are we allowed to win this time? I mean.
Right.
Really?
Yeah.
Jen, I've got a question to ask Moose because I think it's kind of an interesting take on something, if that's okay. Hi, Moose. This is Steve.
Okay.
Hey, how you doing?
Yeah.
And by the way, for those listening, I don't just jump in being rude and all. Jen didn't give me permission to jump in here. I'm actually going to be on a show tomorrow night. There's a big debate about, you know, how did we do in this war? I know it's sort of, you know, big question, big world kind of thing, but there's this never ending question about a war that never ended. And I tend to look at it and go, well, when we achieved the first goals and then the goals changed a bit and there were some other things we had to take care of. And now it seems like we're having to go back over ground that we won already. If you were to go back in your own experience and look at it and say, was there a point where we actually said, this we've won, this we've done, and now we're giving it back? Or would you say it just never sort of ended? What would your perspective on that be?
Well, the way I look at it is, we didn't fight for ground per se. We weren't conquering a country. We weren't there to conquer Iraq. We weren't there to conquer Afghanistan. We were there to rid the country of Taliban or Saddam, and help start a government, you know, help do that kind of stuff. So as far as, you know, losing ground and gaining ground, I don't look at it as that, and I definitely don't look at it like Vietnam, the body count. I think we did do very well. I think we learned a lot strategically. So the new military, you know, the new guys coming up, they're learning a lot of stuff that, you know, was tested just, you know, in combat. The government, I mean, as far as the polls that were set up that we, you know, where we helped, I think with the hands that we were dealt and the rules that we had, I think we did very, very well. But then again, it goes back to we were handcuffed. So if we didn't have those rules, we could have done much, much better.
Let me ask you this, and not get into politics of it, but if you were to say there was a point where it, how do I say this without sounding political? Let me ask you, if the original agendas and such had been followed and not changed such that we suddenly said, oh, we have this exact date, we're leaving, we're gone, thank you very much, good luck to you, we had it, you got it, good luck. Do you think there would be a different outcome there today with all the ground that we took, yes, but also the fact that we changed the government, we removed a tyrant and all those other kinds of things, that we would have been able to hold on to that? Or do you think, you know, it didn't matter? It was what happens today was going to happen.
Honestly, I think it didn't matter as far as they're upholding the government and that kind of thing over there. I don't think it wouldn't work. I mean, it's not that kind of, they're not that kind of people. I mean, not to say that in the future it wouldn't work, but they're so used to being controlled by one guy and doing their own thing, and then having separate villages that have one leader, and that, so to have a government per se, a democracy, I don't see that working there. So as from that aspect, I think this was inevitable as far as us pulling out and, you know, there not being a government set up there.
I appreciate your input. I'm going to go completely off course here. I'm sorry, Jenny. I agree with you 100%, man. I don't think I could agree with you more. All right, Jenny, your show back.
Yeah, no, you're fine. You're fine. It's interesting to me because we actually talked my second to last semester at SIU. I took a class called The Politics of Development, talking about developing nations and what type of government works best in what situation. And they were talking about, well, you know, if we had just gone about it a different way, we could have implemented democracy in the Middle East. And I said, no, I don't think so, because the structure that's already there is not
right.
One that's friendly to a government that lies in the hands of the people. It's just not. They're not ready for it. And the thing about representative government, the thing about a republic, and especially a government that functions the way ours does, for it to work, people have to fight for it. You have to want it badly enough to go out and die for it yourself. You know,
more than a handful have to fight
right.
for it. Yeah.
Well, right. if you look at the way the American Revolution started, you had about 30% of the population that was adamantly opposed to British rule and that wanted to be independent. Then you had about 30% that didn't care one way or the other, and about 30% that was loyal to Britain. And then, you know, it's about 40% that didn't care one way or the other. But you had 30 on either end. And so 30% of Americans, and then only a percentage of those actually went to war. But
right.
if you're, you know, you, but that was American people that went to war for this. If we were in a situation where, you know, you had in Afghanistan, you had the Taliban trying to control everybody, and there was an uprising amongst the people that included, you know, 20 to 30% of the Afghani people. And they were rising up and wanting to take control for themselves. If we went in and helped them, they would be far more successful than what happened, you know, because we went in and we said, no, the people who are leading you are wrong. We're going to fix this for you. You know, but they don't understand, like, for us to go in and fix things, we've fixed it to our liking, not to what works for them.
Right.
And
see, that's the thing that a lot of people...
it's not going to be permanent.
Yeah, a lot of people don't understand that is, yeah, the Taliban was brutal, but the Taliban has kept these villages alive. They are these villages' income. That's something that people don't understand is Afghanistan is so rural. They're used to seeing these pictures of Iraq and with Baghdad and these big cities, and there's not a lot of that in Afghanistan. It's mountains or it's prairie. It's flat. It's no man's land. And these guys, they grow opium and they sell it
yep.
to the Taliban for good money. Yeah, the Taliban may... which they do, you know, they take people and sell them and they kill people. They're brutal. But they keep these villages going. And that's what these people know. And they don't know any different. All they know is, I grow this, I sell it, I keep my mouth shut, I'm good. And we come in and
yeah,
try and change
you
it.
Know.
Yeah. And the other thing is, these people are so out of touch. We went to just southern Washir, which is a large village township, and the town started shooting at us because they thought we were the Russians.
Yep.
They're so out of touch with time and everything. So it's, you know, we're trying to do too much as far as setting up governments and, you know, doing all that kind of stuff. It's just crazy. Just go there, get rid of the Taliban, you know, the leaders, and that's all we need to try and prevent terrorist attacks around the world. Bam. That's all we need to do.
Yeah.
But
yeah, and
that's my opinion.
That's kind
you know?
Of well, yeah, and look at, you know, you see what's going on, well, in Copenhagen this week, and then in France, you know, or in January. The one thing that these attacks have in common, I mean, you see that, well, one, I mean, look at the beheadings on the video of the Coptic Christians from this week in Libya. There, what, 21 of them? And
right.
This is the kind of thing, I noticed something, and I can't remember if it was on, no, it wasn't on your page that I saw this. They were talking about the difference between the way ISIS operates and the way Al-Qaeda operated. Because, you know, Al-Qaeda they'd take hostages, and then they'd say, you know, we're going to kill this person unless you, you know, get out of our country, move your bases away from us, you know, do the, you know what I mean?
Right.
And then, but now you look at what ISIS is doing, and they're saying, we're going to kill these people if you don't release our prisoners. And half the time, they've already killed the person. They're just telling us this. They have no interest in, you know, they're not asking for their own land back. They've made it clear that their intent is just to keep killing everyone that doesn't agree with them.
Right. I mean, I don't think
and
they have land.
So,
they're everywhere. You know.
Well, and that's the thing. They have allies in certain cities. They definitely have places where they're friendly, but they don't have. And that's what makes them so dangerous. That's what is that they don't have centralized leadership and like a capital city, because you can't. There's no objective for you to take out. There's no. You can't cut the head off the snake, because it's not a snake. It's a freaking spider web, and you can't. You know.
Right.
You take out one thread, you take out one thread, and it doesn't take down the whole thing. It just means that they spread out in other directions.
Right. Now, ISIS is kicking butt, man, as far as the mental game. I mean, they are in people's heads. I mean, worldwide. I mean, no pun intended, but they're killing it, you know. They got people scared of them. Now, see, what the thing is that a lot of people don't understand is ISIS is everywhere. There's members of ISIS that are in your local police force. There's members of ISIS that are in your public waterworks. There's members of ISIS that are in the Pentagon, in the White House. They are everywhere. All they're doing is getting all the information and sending it up. I mean, there's in our military, they're learning our tactics. I mean, we had a mission one time, and I can't say where it was, but where a guy went all the way through the army, retired from the army, and then went back to his country and led men in our tactics so he could use our tactics against us. Okay, here's a guy, U.S. Army, retired, did his time, and then goes back because his loyalty was there the whole time. You know, is that not scary? I mean, that...
Yeah.
You got these guys that could be working on your water, your city's water. You know, there's so many ways that
they
could bring
access
down our country.
Yeah.
It's just... I mean, it is just so scary, this world we live in, and no one's scared of the U.S. anymore. No one. Because we don't do anything, you know?
Yeah. On that note, we have to take a quick break. Can you hang on with us and talk some more after the break?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. Awesome. Go ahead and hand me a running spot.
Hi, y'all. This is Laura Lee Majernik, host of the Down and Dirty Sports Show here on AltCon, and I want to tell you about the sisterhood at NFLfemale.com. Smart women, smart football. Come have fun with us. NFLfemales.com.
The alternative source of news, talk, and music for today's unconventional conservatives. This is AltCon Radio.
Welcome back to Stovetop Politics. We are talking to Moose MacArthur about the things we're doing and the things we're not doing in regards to ISIS. Also, Hammy, I'm kind of starting to hate that song. Just saying. we've been talking a lot about kind of what's the back and forth between ISIS and the United States and other countries. And you know, you mentioned at the very end of that last segment that no one's afraid of the United States anymore. And I think that, I mean, that's what it all boils down to, is that no one's afraid of the United States anymore. And I don't say that we want other people to be afraid of the United States because I like it when the U.S. is number one. I mean, I'm not saying that I don't like it when the U.S. is number one. What I'm saying is that it all goes back to Machiavelli, and Ronald Reagan kind of pushed the same type of foreign policy, the peace through strength. The Machiavelli bit, he was asked, you know, would you rather be loved or feared? And the answer is always, if you cannot have both, you choose fear. Because and it's not because, you know, we want, you know, if we ranked the countries, you know, from 1 to 208 or however many the United Nations has on file or whatever, it's not because we want the U.S. to always be number one. It's because we want the U.S. to not continue to get weaker. And the, you know, when you have other nations, when other nations have a healthy fear of not necessarily who you are, but of what you are capable of doing and what you are willing to do in your own defense, that's really what it's about, is you want them to have a healthy fear of what you're willing to do in your own defense. That's really all it boils down to. Because if they know you're not going to do anything, then there is no incentive for them to not beat the crap out of you if they feel they could gain something from doing so.
Agree, totally. And
you know,
I mean, that's exactly what I meant. You know, by people fearing us, is people need to know they can't walk all over us, you know. And not only do people need to know that they can't walk over us, you know, countries need to know that we are the U.S., and if you work with us, we're going to get stuff done like the way it used to be. Not, you know,
right.
If you work with us, you got to follow our rules, and you're going to lose a lot of people because we're nice now, and we're going to hold everybody's hand because that's the way it is now. So.
Well, what about this news that was, I think it was today, actually, that it came out. Obviously, the most recent attacks from ISIS have been on Jordan and Egypt, with the Coptic Christians that were beheaded in the video we were talking about earlier, and then the Jordanian pilot that was burned alive a week or two ago.
Right.
And, you know, Jordan responds with a line from a Clint Eastwood movie about our only problem is going to be if we run out of fuel and bullets. You know, and obviously Egypt responded immediately with bombings against ISIS militants, and we haven't responded in any such manner. Obviously, you know, we condemn things. You know, we're good at that. We stand in the White House press room and we condemn violence because, you know, it's bad and stuff. But we don't actually do anything about
right.
it. I mean,
we don't want to see
with a mind to kill is going to stop if they know the worst thing that's going to happen is somebody's going to go on TV and tell you you're naughty. Really?
Well, we don't want to be mean like they were during the Crusades, you know. So we're just going to be nice.
Talked about the Crusades last week.
Yeah.
Oh, that is such a misreading of history. We talked about that last week.
Right.
That,
yeah.
You know, the
yeah.
Crusades were actually backlash. You know, because
right.
What was it? Muhammad took Mecca in 630 A.D. The Christian Crusades didn't start until almost 1100 A.D. And
right.
were
well,
an immediate response
we don't,
to Muslims
yeah.
sacking, you know, Spanish cities.
We don't want to sink to that low. You know, we don't want to be mean. We got to
right.
take the high road on everything.
Right.
You know.
Well, yeah, taking the high road apparently this week involved us not sharing information with Jordan and Egypt, information that could have possibly prevented the deaths of the Jordanian pilot and the 21 Christians that were beheaded last week. But apparently the White House did not see fit to share that information, and now we've got people mad at us for that, too.
Right.
Did you hear about that today? That the
no,
White House had
no.
information on ISIS targets that might have, yep.
That
you know, you
got
to give them a fair shot. And, you know, according to Hillary, we have to understand the enemy. No, sometimes you just have to kill them. Sorry, but, you know,
right.
when it comes down to it, sometimes that's the only option.
Well, how much more understanding do we need, really? You know, it's just.
Yeah,
it's
you know what people forget when they say that is that we've been fighting Islamic terror since 1800, really.
Right.
Because Thomas Jefferson was the first one to deal with it, and I mean this was the very first. I mean the Marines were born in an effort to beat back Islamic terrorism. Really. So you, I mean, you know this history. You know that this has been going on for hundreds of years. And here's
right.
the thing. If Thomas Jefferson, who was, by all accounts, an isolationist until this happened, decided, hey, not only is there a good enough reason for us to go to war on foreign soil, but we need to stop this before it gets out of hand in regards to Islamic terror. He advocated
right.
reading the Quran because he believed in knowing your enemy. So this is a guy who understood his enemy. And his response was, we need to kill them. They haven't changed in, you know, 200 years. Why
nope.
should our understanding of them be any different? We've already studied this. We already know what they're doing. We've seen it repeated throughout history over and over again. What is there left to understand? I'm not sure what she's asking us to do, but, you know.
She's just talking.
Nothing's changed in 1,300 years.
Well, that too. I was just talking specifically as far as the American government dealing with an Islamic threat. Nothing's changed in 200 years. But you're right. In regards to the way those in pursuit of a caliphate behave, nothing's changed in 1,300 years at all.
And it won't.
So, well, no, because it doesn't have to. We go ahead and change for them so that it, you know, makes it easier. They don't have to change. They're not being forced to change. They're not being forced to adapt because no one's stopping them from doing what they're already doing.
Yep. Totally agree. Totally agree.
You know, lots of civilizations have come and gone. Lots of Romans, the Greeks, whoever, have come and gone. What is it about this one group that from 700 and some odd on has been such a thorn in the side to the rest of the world? I mean, not just Christians, not just Jews, the world in general. I've never quite understood that. There's this, you know, everybody else has an idea of their religion and spreading it by being missionaries or something like that. It's always by the sword with these guys. It has been forever. And why people don't get that or see that or understand, that's the philosophy, that's the ideology. It will never change. It floors me that people think that somehow or another magically in the 21st century now, we can set up democratic governments and suddenly they're all going to be happy and westernized.
Right.
Yeah. Well, and that's we were talking about this, that, you know, I think that and you can correct me if you think I'm way off base here, especially as it regards Americans and how they've looked at this. Americans are so used to the idea of freedom, you know, free speech and free expression and this, and we've seen what democracy, and I use that term loosely because I realize we don't actually live in a democracy. We've seen what democracy can do for a people that is ready for it. And we've got this optimism because we've been in this place where we've been so blessed. We've got this optimism that makes us think that if we just do it the right way, we can give what we have to other people. And the reality is that Reagan was right when he quoted, was it Winthrop, the Puritan pastor who wrote, he wrote about the shining city on the hill. When they were on the boat coming to America, that he was writing about, this is what we're going to build. We're going to build this place that will stand as an example. You know, we can, realistically, the United States can spread democracy. And I'm using the term loosely. We can spread this idea that liberty is paramount and man, flawed as he is capable of governing himself. We can spread that idea, but not by going into other countries and making them elect people. Simply by existing and showing them that it works. That's how you do it. That's how you spread the idea of democracy, the idea of individual liberty. You have to show people that it works. And the problem is that when you have a people that is opposed to not believe anything that comes from the West, if you go in and you set up a government and tell them do it our way, you're insulting them. I mean, this is a slap in the face saying, hey, you know, we're going to come in and we're going to implement the government of the people that you think are evil. You know, enjoy. this is going to work, right, guys? No.
I have said this for ages
now. They don't want it.
Yeah, this is this does not go over well with Americans. But I'll tell you something, and I've said this for ages. This is a culture with a mindset which responds far better to a dictatorship than it ever will to a democracy. And as terrible as that sounds to Americans, look at Egypt right now. Egypt is far more stable under a military dictatorship, which is just simply said, we've had enough of this, and we'll set up some form of democracy, but very limited, than it ever would respond to this full-on everybody vote, everybody have – because the culture itself does not respond to that the same way as Westerners do, and we don't get that as Americans and Europeans, and it's going to be our failure forever to try and impose that.
Yeah.
Well, right, and what we don't – well, the other thing that we don't get is that and here, you know, feel free to start throwing the eggs now, but an authoritarian government is not always bad. It would be very bad here. I think we're far too close to it here. But Western society is built to believe that authoritarian government is wrong. And I get that. But when you look at a society like this, they need a stronger leadership. Oh, stop it. They need a stronger leadership because the people, and part of it has to do with the literacy rate. I mean, if you look at Afghanistan, at Saudi Arabia, at Iraq and Iran, I mean, you're lucky if you've got a literacy rate of over 30%. And I guarantee you 90% of the people who can read are men. When you have no literacy rate, when your people are not educated, they can't be expected to successfully govern themselves because they don't know what they're doing. And that's not to say, you know, Scott Walker didn't get a college degree, so he can't be the president. I'm just talking about rudimentary
nice
education. I mean, these people are not, you know, most of them don't have a third grade education. You know,
there's something
else,
they have a culture which is built on they have a tribal culture.
That too.
They have have this ideal of the tribal chieftains. Even when we have gone in, even when you look back at it today and you go, who's fighting who in either Iraq or Syria, you still fall back on these different tribal chieftains. I'm sorry, but you're not going to go in, win a war, and suddenly override that entire culture that has taken place for thousands of years.
Yeah.
I mean,
and
they're
built for it. Go ahead.
I mean, just the way that they view each other over there. I mean, the way that they view, like, what a life means to us. Like what our children mean to us, like how much we love our children, it is not the same over there. They don't view their relatives. They don't view the human race the same. If one of their children dies, well, that's just one more person that's not going to work the field, you know. Where if one of our children dies, oh, you know, it's a big deal, but it's not a big deal over there. So to try and change the whole culture's view on things, you know, like you guys are saying, it's never going to work. The technology is not there. You know, where you talk about like the tribes. I mean, there's just nothing there. The communication isn't there. I mean, they have, like in Afghanistan, they have traveling bazaars, which is a long wagon train of selling anything from a AA battery to human beings for, you know, sex slaves or farm hands or whatever. I mean, then that traveling bazaar then tells them the news of what's going on in the world. But until that gets there, they have no news. I mean, how are you supposed to have a government that spreads votes and spreads news from a traveling Walmart, you know? It's just never going to work.
What's really interesting, you know, you're talking about the lack of development. I mean, one of the other classes that I took was actually an Islamic history course. And we read a book called The Travels of Ibn Battuta. And this is a guy who was marginally educated for his time period. And he started out, he was going to make the pilgrimage to Mecca. And he started near Egypt, and he traveled through what is now Israel and Syria and all, you know, made this journey. And he ended up, you know, basically having such a good time traveling that he continued to travel. And as he was on his travels, he'd pass the news from one city to the next. And it hasn't changed any. Now, this guy made, you know, this guy was traveling, you know, in the immediate aftermath of the Crusades. So we're talking about 11, 1200 AD. The way that they get news hasn't changed.
Right.
And, you know, we can't expect their government or their you know, ability to understand government or their ability to govern themselves to have evolved if we can't, you know, they're still waiting for some guy to walk, you know, 500 miles to find out if grandma died yet.
Right.
I mean, you can't really expect those two things to... It's completely unrealistic to assume that they will develop in regards to, you know, politics and Western thought, but not anything else.
By the way, can I just say that's not even the other. Traveling Walmart.
Yeah, that was pretty good. That was pretty good.
Well, I do what I can.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So here's the deal. I have a couple other things that I want to get to really quick, and it seems like we're kind of getting to the end of that. Moose, you're welcome to hang on for the last 5 minutes and weigh in on anything you like. We're going to kind of hit pop culture real quick. Now, Madonna has been kind of in the spotlight for, 30 years now? And we now have Radio One, which controls, you know, a bunch of different radio stations across the country, kind of like Clear Channel has their radio stations and MS Communications has theirs. Well, Radio One has decided that Madonna is too old and irrelevant for primetime airplay. So unless they're going to play her after 7 p.m. when they don't have to follow the set playlist, she's now been banned from daytime radio on a bunch of stations. And I just thought it was kind of funny that, you know, Madonna is irrelevant and old. Because hasn't she been that way since, like, 1989? Realistically? I mean, I'm just, you know.
Once we all knew she really wasn't a virgin.
Yeah, the bloom came off the rose pretty quick there, didn't it?
Yeah, it was gone.
Right?
The crush was gone.
Did you watch this? Did you see any of the commentary on the New York Fashion Week? I will say we did talk about it briefly last week because we were talking about the baby that was born with Down syndrome and the parents that ended up divorcing over the fact that the father wanted to keep this baby. And we discussed the actress from American Horror Story who also has Down syndrome and became the first model to walk the runway at New York Fashion Week. You know, the first model with Down syndrome to walk the runway there. Well, what we didn't talk about last week was that Kanye West debuted his clothing line last week. Did you see any of the commentary on this?
Can I just say we're talking about Kanye West way too much over the last few weeks? How,
only
how
to make
does
fun
this
of him,
buffoon
I promise.
Get him managed to get himself into the news with his little naked women on stage and never mind.
I know. So, you know, basically nude body stockings. I mean, really? If you don't want to put clothes on, don't put clothes on. You don't have to pay him to make you look like you're naked when you're not. I mean, it just doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But, the post-apocalyptic hobo look, apparently, is what he was going for. And, of course, people kind of ripped him to shreds. The reviews kind of ripped him to shreds. And the big news story, though, was that Kim Kardashian, his wife, was sitting in the front row next to Beyonce, and their daughter threw a fit during the show. And she's a one-year-old baby. She's going to cry. That's what they do. And what was funny about it was that they asked Kanye West, you know, about the tantrum, just kind of joking. And he's like, she just wanted people to stop being mean to her daddy. I'm like, oh, so this is about you then, huh? Not just you have
but
a one-year-old.
But wasn't it nice of him to wear the latest fashion there? I mean, and look just as trashy as everybody else?
Oh, my God.
She had on a fur. She had on a fur coat and a "Hey, I look like a white chick" underneath.
I'm sorry. Are you talking about white chicks in general, or are you talking about
Wayne's
Brothers kind of white
chick? I don't know what she was wearing. She got up wearing, Kane's latest outfit plus a fur coat. I killed an animal for this. Oh, and here's me without the animal. I don't know what the devil was she wearing.
I swear Kane West has got to be laughing
his butt all the way to the bank right now going, stupid people bought this crap and let me put on a show with white chicks running around on stage looking like they got nothing on. Oh, and guess what? I'm gonna get my wife to do the same thing. Here she is.
Yeah, I'm waiting for him to go, you know, I'm waiting for him to, like, finish one of these fashion shows and just be like, psych, gotcha.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, you did. Oh, my goodness.
It was bizarre.
Yeah.
But what is this?
Okay.
Let me ask you something. You're the host, but I'm going to ask you a question. Is this not indicative, though, of the bizarre has nothing to do with the real world of fashion?
They're talking about making leggings for men, you know, and that's the nicest weird thing that I've heard lately. There are some that apparently leave holes for your junk so you can leave that on display, because that's what we need is so fashion has never made much sense to me, but you know, I'm a true child of the 80s, so I wear what's comfortable and I don't care.
Hey, Moose, I got a question for you.
Yeah.
Are you going to start wearing Kanye West leggings or I look like a white woman outfit anytime real soon?
I didn't plan on it, but if...
Let me throw a little bone out there for you, okay? When you go to one of your reunions with your buds from the Marines, don't do it. Don't do it. I'm just gonna throw it out there. I think it's a fair warning to give you.
Right. I might rock them at the gym, maybe. Who knows?
You might. Yes, you will. You and all the other girls.
Right.
Oh my God. This show took a wrong turn.
poor Jenny sitting here going, I can mute his mic and I didn't. Dad, burn it. Talking about me, by the way.
Okay. Well, all right. Yeah. Now, last thing I'm going to hit really quick before we hang up for the week. We're going to be doing a new segment, and every week. It's going to be called Bonehead of the Week. And, of course, this week, and I'm sure she will be a repeat offender, that honor goes to Sally Cohn, who said, "We should not attack ISIS because it's exactly what they want us to do, and we'd be playing into their hands." Yeah.
You said she.
So what do you think? Is that a good reason to not attack the people who are, you know, beheading American journalists? And, yeah. Because that's what they want us to do. Man, I'll tell you what they're asking for. But, you know, it's like the little kid that misbehaves. You know, what they want is your attention, and they don't care if that attention is positive or negative. To me, that's what ISIS is doing. They want your attention. But what they need is a foot up their ass.
Do you think she honestly believes this, that she believes that they're actually just doing this and that we're playing into their hand somehow? What is it she thinks they're going to gain by us killing them?
I don't know. You know, you think she's a man. I think she's a parody. I'll be honest. I think that there is
a
team of writers.
Of a man.
I think that there's a team of writers saying, what can we do now to, you know, and you know, let's see if we can make the right go into a tailspin over this, and then they decide what she's going to say, and that's it right there. Honestly, I think that Sally Cohn, Rachel Maddow, and you know, the entire staff at Salon, I think the same team is behind all of that. That's my conspiracy theory for the night, guys.
So you think this is deliberate? You think this is a thing they do deliberately to spin off conservatives and right wing nut jobs and whatever else?
Oh, I think some people do. Honestly, I think Sally Cohn's just delusional. I think she believes what she's saying because she's been completely taken in by the narrative of the left. You know, there are so many of them that have, and I think she's one of them.
What does she really think? That if we don't bomb them, they'll just go, oh, damn it, so much for that. Well, we'll try something else next time, and they'll go home? Gosh, we really wanted to be bombed by the U.S. They didn't play along. Guess we'll go back for Thanksgiving.
No, I think that she's the Hillary school of thought, that it's not like that they're not coming after us. You know, maybe they beheaded an American journalist, but, you know, he was dumb enough to go over there. And, you know, if we weren't messing around in their sandbox, they wouldn't be doing this to us. I think that's the school of thought that she's in. And
so if we would just leave them alone.
Mm-hmm. Then
yeah,
they
if
go.
We just
on, they go ahead
away,
and kill their own
cause
people.
All the problems.
You know, they go ahead and keep killing their own people and the other people that you know got in their way. But you know, we wouldn't be there, and then we could sit in the United States and you know look down our noses at them and talk about human rights violations in UN meetings, and we wouldn't actually have to do anything. But we could be, you know. We could be pretentious and self-righteous about it.
Oh
and,
my gosh,
and that's
I've
pretty
got
much
it.
It. You know,
I know what this is. Sally Cohn is the missing Lindbergh baby.
Okay.
Just inherited dad's genes. Well, you know what he said, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'm sorry to everyone out there that just went, what the hell did Hammy just say? No, seriously. You know, but he was of the same mindset, right? This is their problem. This is the world. This is Europe's problem, not ours. This is the Jews' problem, not ours. Let them deal with it.
Yep.
Don't involve us. Don't drag our country into it. 6 million dead people later, oops.
Yeah, well, there's that. So, all right. Well, Hannah, we need to wrap this up, and we'll get back to more fun stuff next week. We're gonna eventually. I promise we're gonna update on Gamergate. We got some stuff about the tie-ins between the Gamergate issue that we talked about a couple weeks ago and Common Core and how it's coming to your school. So we'll talk about that next week. Plus, you know, whatever else happens in the meantime. All right, Moose MacArthur, thanks again for hanging out with us. You've been great, as always.
Thanks so much.
And Hammy, thanks for a good show. Have a great
You're
night,
welcome.
Guys.
By the way, we will have looks like we're actually going to have a special of the red wine on this Wednesday night, and then Friday night we'll be back with Getting Hammered. The week after that, we're going to be at CPAC. We're going to figure it out then what we're going to broadcast from there. Not quite sure yet, but we'll let you know.
Okay. All right.
I counted out his money and it made a pretty penny. I put it in me pocket and I took it home to Jenny. She sighed and she swore that she never would deceive me. But the devil take the women, for they like so free and easy. With shirting, I don't do, I don't da. Crack ball, but adio.